Blog Talk Radio.
Wake up, everybody, no more sleeping in bed. No more back to thinking, time for thinking ahead. The world has changed so very much from what it used to be. There's so much hatred, war and poverty. Oh, wake up. A new way. Maybe then they'll listen to what you have to say. They're the ones who's coming up, and the world is in their hands. When you teach the children, teach them the very best you can. The world won't get no better if we just let it be. Na 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 na. We gotta change it, girl. Just you and me. Wake up all the doctors, make the old people well. They're the ones who suffer and who catch all the hair. But they don't have so very long before their judgment day. So won't you make them happy before they pass away? Wake up all the builders, time to build a new land. I know we could do it if we all lend a hand. The only thing we have to do is put it in our minds. Surely things will work out, they do it every time. The world won't get no better if we just let it be. The world won't get no better. We gotta change it, just you and me.
That's right. We need some help. We welcome you to MPH Radio. Today is October the 12th, 2019. And our theme for today is Africa may have 90% of the world's poor in the next 10 years. That's our theme for today. And we'd like for you to call in later on at 818-337-0016. But like always, MPH is a radio station that's geared toward the oppressed communities, the underserved communities. And we have a full lineup today. We want you to get your pen and paper out so you can write some things down that you may not have known as it relates to our history and our continued contributions to humanity. What we're going to do today in terms of the order of the lineup, we're going to start out with the first segment of our program, as always, giving you something to think about. We talk about what is freedom. We're going to give you something to think about. That is a concept that's often talked about. Many people are trying to achieve it, but many people are confused in terms of what freedom is. So we want to give you some concepts of freedom and tell me or tell us how it fits into your life. That will be the first segment of the program. Then we'll go into Black Benefacts. We have some interesting Black Benefacts for you today. For our next segment, we will go with MPH News and Articles of Interest. And after that, we'll, of course, talk about how you can support MPH and join us. That's the order for today. So right now, what we're going to do is we're going to go into this whole concept of talk about what is freedom. What is freedom? What is freedom? If you look to Brother Che, he said that freedom is we have no right to believe that freedom can be won without struggle. Che said, we have no right to believe that freedom can be won without struggle. How does that fit into your realities when you talk about freedom? The second definition defined by Alice Walker, she stated, no person is your friend who demands your silence or denies you right to grow. Let me read that again by Alice Walker. She said, no person is your friend who denies you your silence or denies your right to grow. I mean, that's something that may be going on today. We can see a lot of people, institutions and governments are denying other people and nations the right to be independent, to be functional. So we know they can't be that friend, according to Alice Walker. And the third definition today dealing with the concept of world freedom comes from Nelson Mandela. He stated, when a man is denied the right to live the life he believes, he has no choice but to become an outlaw. Let me read that one again by Nelson Mandela. He stated, when a man is denied the right to live the life he believes in, he has no choice but to become an outlaw. What do y'all think about those definitions of freedom? We need some time to think about that. And when we come back, we will come into our Black Men of Facts. We're going to take a station break right now, and we'll be right back. You are listening to Missing Pages of History Radio, MPH.
I learned to depend on me.
like to welcome you back to MPH Radio. Let's teach the children. Teach them so they have some dignity. And that's one of the things MPH Radio is trying to do, is to teach our youth to have some sense of dignity. And one of the best way to do this is to give them a sense of their history. And this is what we're going to do right now with our Black Men in Facts. We have Susie, who is a contributor and member of MPH. She's going to share some MPH Black Men in Facts with you today. So right now, we're going to turn this mic over to Susie. We'd like to welcome you to MPH. And what do you have for the audience today, Susie? Okay, now we can hear you. Go ahead, Susie.
Okay. Sorry about that. Technical difficulties. But we will recognize and honor Africans in America who made contributions to some aspects of life in this country and society in the area of academia, breaking barriers for future Africans in America, or creating opportunities for children that they would never have before, had before. Here are nine individuals who are contemporary standouts for the community. And the first one is Cornel West. West is redefining what it means to be a professor. As a political activist going back to the 70s, he continues to encourage his colleagues to lead by example by participating in civic discourse and protesting unjust policies. That was Cornel West. Next one, number two, is Bobby Alston. Alston serves as the head of the Village Foundation, an organization he founded in 1977 to engage young African-American men in society through events like Give a Boy a Book Day. Number three, Michael Carter. In 1971, Carter's parents founded V.E. Carter Development Center for Children. Carter later worked there teaching the African language Swahili to children. Number four, Robert Hill. In a long career of researching African-American life, Hill's greatest contribution to academia was his book, The Strength of Black Families, and its follow-up 25 years later, which fought negative stereotypes of blacks. Number five, Joe Lewis Clark. Clark changed the way many people think of disciplining in schools. The former drill sergeant's tough style captured national attention when it was chronicled in the movie Lean on Me. Number six, Ramona Edlin. With her direction, the National Urban Coalition started to Say Yes to a Youngster's Future program to provide educational help to black teachers and youth in America, eventually teaming with the Department of Education. Number seven, the first university black students program by Nathan Hare in this country was directed by Nathan Hare, and when his administration attempted to cut the program by half, he protested with students for 5 months. Eight, Aaron Lloyd Dixon. Dixon's contribution to academia came in the form of a program called Free Breakfast for School Children, which he helped launch as the founding member of Seattle's Black Panther chapter. And last and final is Carletta Walls Lanier. after the Supreme Court ruled in Brown versus Board of Education, the Little Rock Nine students braved much harassment and integrated a high school in 1957. Lanier was the youngest member. And there I've given you nine academia contemporary standouts. Many facts. Clyde?
We'd like to thank you, Susan, for your many facts. And to our youth, remember, we have been successful in all sorts of areas that have made humanity move forward. So this field of academia, if we had done before, we can continue to do this. So we want to just share with you just a little bit of the contributions that Africans in America have made in the area of academia. So right now, what we're going to do, we're going to take a quick station break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about what's going on in our communities as it relates to events and activities. There are some key things, key events that's going on in our community, and we want to make sure that you are aware of it and you participate in it. So when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about what's going on in our community and what kind of events that's coming up that's worthy of your support. We'll be right back, and you'll listen to it. MPH Radio. Create an environment where not only can we stay together and work together, but together we become synonymous in terms of who we are. At this point in time, we'd like to go into MPH, what's going on in our community, events and activities. There are some real interesting events that's going on in our community at this point in time, and we'd like to share some of the events that are going on in our community. Right now, the African Awareness Association presents a Day for Africa. That's right. Africa is having a day for Africa. This will take place in Richmond, Virginia. It will be Richmond's first annual Pan-African International Festival of Culture and Unity. The theme is the Pan-African Connection and Our Struggles. Freedom now. We are one people, one struggle, and one destiny. Africa must be free. This festival will take place by the African Awareness Association on Sunday, October 27, 2019, outside at the Afro-Congo. That's 3302 Winsboro Road, Richmond, Virginia, 23231. It starts at 11 a.m. and it ends at 6:30 p.m. I want to remind you that 400 years later, after 1619, we are Africans. We love our home mother, Africa. So this is sounding like it's going to be a very unique and interesting festival. It's calling on all Africans to come together. So please come on out to this event. For more information, you can dial 804-549-7492, 804-549-7492, or 202-714-9435. It's seeking your support, and you can send your contribution to support this festival by sending to the African Awareness Association, P.O. Box 4433, Richmond, Virginia, 23220, or if you have access to Cash App, with the green background and the little white dollar sign, you can cash AMP it to 804-319-9289. That's 804-319-9289. So that's going on October 27th at the Afro Congo, 3302 Winsboro Road. So be there. Support this great event by the African Awareness Association. Also, the African Awareness Association has a special trip, and it says that, yes, you can still travel to Cuba. The African Awareness Association is organizing a solidarity tour for the people to Havana, Cuba, from October 31st to November 6th. They'll be leaving from Miami, Florida. You still have time to go on this trip. If you're interested, call 804-549-7492 or 202-714-9435, or you can email them at African Awareness Association 2 at Gmail. You know, we hear a lot about Cuba. It's important for you to go and see for yourself. Cuba's doing some great things for oppressed communities, underserved communities. So support this trip if you can, and come on out there and join them. So at this point in time, we're going to turn the mic over to Susie, and she has an announcement on some of the things that's going on in our community. Susie, what's some of the things going on in our community?
Okay, first I'd like to mention we have the historic delegation to Colombia, sponsored by the U.S. Labor Against the War, and that's USLAW, and the Alliance for Global Justice, which is AFGJ, and they are going on November the 24th through December the 4th, 2019. Come with USLAW and AFGJ to join our labor conditions on the third anniversary of the peace accords. They will develop and release a report on the workers and peace in Colombia that will be an important contribution to the hard task to build a durable peace. As labor unionists and allies from the United States, they understand all too well that the same U.S. politicians and corporations that are attacking their rights at home are sorting labor rights and peace in Colombia. This delegation will give you a chance to reach across borders to forge international solidarity that benefits all workers. Colombia is still the most dangerous place in the world to be a labor organizer. In both Colombia and the U.S., our rights to organize are being eroded every day. But in both countries, workers are still standing up and fighting back. While auto workers at General Motors are on strike in the U.S., injured auto workers from the GM plant in Bogota are demonstrating for just compensation. While farm workers in the U.S. are waging struggles with corporations like Wendy's and Driscoll's for fair pay, members of the FENSERGO agriculture workers in Colombia are resisting right-wing efforts to displace their families and murder rural union representatives. While nurses and teachers lead the fight for public health and education here at home, in Colombia, workers are demanding that schools and health care be available in Pleasant, Afro-Colombian, and indigenous communities. Join them for the opportunity for internationalist solidarity as they open a way for a better world. The USLAW and the AFGJ invite you to attend the following web meeting to learn the latest about the trip, November the 24th to December the 4th delegation. The meeting is from 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Central, 6 p.m. Mountain, 5 p.m. Arizona and Pacific. This coming Wednesday, October the 16th. Here's the call-in information, or you can write to James, J-A-M-E-S, at afgj.org. For more info, if you can't make the meeting.
Okay, thank you, Susan. For the last event, in terms of what's going on in your community, we received a correspondence from the Kwame Ture Foundation. They said the Black Panther reawakens. The Kwame Ture Foundation committed to equality and unity. As a nonprofit organization founded and administrated by the Ture Carmichael family, the Kwame Ture Foundation aspires to educate and to contribute to the causes that Kwame Ture and his comrades around the world. Excuse me for 1 second. We have some background noise. We're going to get rid of the background noise. We thank you. As we say, the Kwame Ture and his comrades around the world live for because we must remember our ancestors and honor those that fought for us. And because white privilege exists in Africa and her descendants remain vulnerable, we strive to educate and empower. Your assistance and or your inspiration help hundreds of students in Guinea, West Africa, become more aware of the civil rights, black power, and Pan-African movements via the Black Panther Reawakens exhibit. You can further support the Kwame Ture Foundation to bring this exhibit via by revolutionaries and aspects to students in the U.S. and the Caribbean. It will inspire budding Pan-Africanism and students in schools like Howard University and University of West Indies. With your help now, this is something that we can do together. Quickly organize. Thank you, Boca, the Kwame Ture Foundation. To find out more about it, you can always email them at thekwameturefoundation@gmail.com. So those are our community events and activities for today. What we're going to do, we're going to pause for this call, and when we come back, we're going to discuss some articles of interest in MPH News. And this is where you can call in, because we have some interesting news that's going on in our community. We want you to weigh in on this. So when we come back, we're going to talk about these articles that has a these articles that have a profound impact on our communities and our people on a daily basis. We'll be right back. You'll listen to MPH Radio.
Tennessee. Lord, I've really been real stressed, down and out, losing ground. Although I am black and brown, problems got me past.
Tennessee, when he made the statement, you walk the rope that our forefathers walk. It seems like we're still walking that rope. So we'd like to welcome you back. You're listening to The Voice of MPH. What we're going to do is make our transition down to MPH news and articles of interest. Our first article of interest, going to deal with this whole question of students in debt. Susie, I'll bring her back in and she will share with you this particular article that features this issue of students in debt. Susie? Welcome back.
Hi. This article was written by Monique Judge of The Root. It was done on October the 11th, 2019, and it's called Lock Her Up. Bessie DeVos could face jail for failing to forgive student loan debt. How corrupt is the Trump administration, you ask? So corrupt that the Department of Education, under the leadership of Trump appointee Bessie DeVos, has still been hounding Fortis former students of Corinthian Colleges, Inc., to pay their student loan debts. Those same students that were promised that their debts would be forgiven because they were defrauded by the for-profit colleges that eventually went bankrupt. Newsweek reported that at least 1,800 people reportedly lost wages or tax funds in direct violation of a June 2018 ruling made by the U.S. Magistrate Judge Sally Kim that prohibited the Education Department from going after former students of Corinthian Colleges. At the hearing in San Francisco on Monday, it was revealed through a filing from the Education Department that some 16,000 former students were incorrectly informed at one time or another that they had payments due on their federal student loans. Newsweek reported, at best, it is gross negligence. At its worst, it's international flaunting of order, Kim said, reported. I'm not sure if this is contempt or sanctions, she added. I'm not sending anyone to jail yet, but it's good to know that I have that ability. The case traces
its way back to 2015 when Corinthian had been among the largest for-profit college chains in the United States until waiver investigations and litigation, including a complaint by the 2020 presidential hopeful and then California Attorney General Kamala Harris, alleged widespread deception and fraud. The Education Department has reportedly only forgiven a total of 10 student loans while continuing to pursue former students for their debt. According to a statement from the Project on Predatory Student Lending, the Education Department demanded incorrect loan payments from 16,034 students, and of those, 3,289 made one or more payments that they did not owe. There are 1,147 students whose loans have not been confirmed to be in the correct status. And in addition to harming the credit of 847 students who were not in default, the department did involuntary wage garnishments and took tax refunds from 1,808 students. There have been no consequences for violation of my order 16,000 times, Judge Kim said. And this article was published October the 11th, 2019.
Thank you, Susie. You're listening to MPH News and Articles of Interest. Our second article of interest comes from the Bloomberg Company. It was published or written on October 9th, 2019. And the theme of this, or the title of this article is, Africa may have 90% of the world's poor in the next 10 years, the World Bank says. It has a subtitle, the rate of poverty reduction should slow after commodity price slump, fiscal tightening limits government scope to reduce poverty. Now, this is a really interesting article. I want y'all to listen real closely, and let's talk about the implication of this. It says that Africa could be home to 90% of the world's poor by 2030, as governments across the continent have little fiscal space to invest in. Poverty reduction programs and economic growth remain sluggish, the World Bank says. That's up from 55% in 2015, and it will happen unless drastic action is taken, the leader said in its biannual Africa Pulse report released Wednesday, in which it also cut growth forecasts for the region's key economies. The rate of poverty reduction in Africa slowed substantially after the collapse in commodity prices that started in 2014, resulting in negative growth, domestic product growth on per capita basis, according to the report. As countries in other regions continue to make progress in poverty reduction, forecasts suggest that poverty will soon become predominantly African phenomena. While the poverty rate in sub-Saharan Africa, defined as percentage of people living on less than $1.90 per day, fall between 1990 and 2015, rapid population growth resulted in the number of poor people on the continent increased to more than 416 million from 278 million over the same period, according to World Bank data. The lender said pro-poor growth policies are required to accelerate poverty reduction and that fiscal tightening limits government's ability to spend on social sectors. Given the limit scope for redistribution and transfer to raise incomes of the poor in most African countries, the focus should be squarely on raising the labor productivity. That is, what it will take to increase their earning in self-employment or wage employment, according to the report. Government debt increases to 55% of the GDP in 2018 from 36% in 2013 due to a lack of fiscal consolidation after countries tried to counter the effects of the global financial crisis by boosting spending. The World Bank said about 46% of African countries were in debt distress or considered a high risk in 2018, compared to 22% 5 years earlier. For many countries, it is not a good idea to borrow non-concessionally because of the risk of the debt stress that they already have, World Bank Vice President said in an interview October 2nd in Ivory Coast, commercial capital, Abidjan. They should instead focus on concessional credit and grants. The lender lowered its economic growth forecast for Sub-Saharan Africa to 2.6%, down from its April projection of 2.8%. So just listen to this. We're talking about in the next 10 years that 90% of the world poor not only will be come from Africa, but they're talking about making Africa synonymous with the cold concept that we call poor. Now, what we're going to do right now, we're going to open up our phone lines. We have invited two individuals to get their perspectives on this article. We welcome you to call in as well by dialing 818-337-0016. Now, this is a missing page in history. That is said, most African people do not realize the peculiar situation Africa and African people are in when it comes to this whole question of economic oppression. I think this is what this article reflects. So we can have this discussion with us. We have Brother Haki Kamafi Machoki and Ephraim Williams. They're going to chime in on their understanding of the implication of this article. So right now, we're going to bring Brother Haki in, and we're going to bring Brother Anthony in to Missing Pages of History. And Brother Haki, welcome to MPH. And give us just your general overview right now on this particular article. What is the implication of this whole question of having 90% of the world poor in Africa in the next 10 years?
Well, I think first and foremost, what people have to understand, and this is part and parcel of a international program, a political economic system which is dedicated to the destabilization of Africa. So we talk about in terms of declining, economics in Africa. We understand this is orchestrated; it's not a fluke. And one of the things is that unfortunately, we got a situation where too many African leaders but continue to participate in the system, which is diametrically opposed to his survival. For example, when we talk about investments in Africa, when the irony is that when you talk about investments, Africa offers a higher returns on investments than any other place in the world. But despite that, what happened is that there is a situation, particularly in the West, in which when you talk about investments, we're talking about essentially private investments, which means their focus is not in terms of the development of Africa, but to maximize their profit. In order for them to maximize their profit, they have to create a situation where they actually maximize the vulnerabilities of Africa. In other words, Africa's ability or inability to pay back its debt is part of the whole process in terms of why the loans are made in the first place. I think one of the things superimposed upon that, brother, is that the problem is that, when we talk about these wars that are devastating Africa, I think one of the things to understand, again, too, these wars are orchestrated. They're not flukes. So when we talk about all these wars that are taking place in Africa, one of the things we have to understand is that there are few political interests, in particular among the West, in terms of making sure Africa remains underdeveloped. How do they underdevelop Africa using wars? Well, what they do essentially is that they finance these so-called terrorist groups, whether it be Boko Haram, whether it be ISIS, whether it be whoever, Al-Shabaab, whoever it is. They finance these groups. Not only do they finance these groups, they actually arm these groups. And there's an interesting report called the arms report, which people should check it out in terms of, disclosing, the relationship between, Western financing of these so-called terrorist groups and the kind of destabilization that's taking place in Africa. So by providing these so-called terrorists in Africa with weaponry and finance, then you ensure that African governments have no other recourse but to invest in more military armory, you know, from the West. And so, therefore, in the process of fighting against these so-called terrorists in Africa, what they do is contribute to their own destabilization. So unless African leaders understand, wake up to the game that's being played, then one thing is sure, that the destabilization of Africa will in fact continue. So this is one of the problems that we have. In addition to that, brother, we have a situation also. We talk about things like proliferation of diseases on the continent. Again, there's a book by Judith Miller called the called Germs, and it talks about Walter Bassoon, one of the leading architects in terms of proliferation of all kinds of diseases on the continent. We're talking about Ebola, we're talking about AIDS, we're talking about HIV, we're talking about numerous kinds of diseases that are inflicting Africa. And so, therefore, again, we understand that this importation of diseases in Africa is part of a geopolitical design in which you want to actually eliminate large number of people on the continent. So unless African leaders come to the realization that they're at war, they will never get to the point where they actually understand that their survival hinges on their unity. And what you have to have is a unified Africa under one currency in terms of being able to fight back. Without that unified nature, without Africa having a solid currency in terms of fighting back, it has no means to resist. Because keep in mind, all the commodity prices are set not in Africa, they're set in the West. Even though the commodities come from Africa in terms of raw form, in terms of the setting of the prices comes from the West. And so if the West feels that they have too much of a commodity, they simply devalue that commodity and the price falls. Well, it has devastating impact on Africa's resources, and not only in terms of resources, but also in terms of, you know, its finances. So this is fundamentally a problem that we're confronted with in terms of Africa's struggles. But keep in mind that what happens in Africa also has a relationship with what happens in the Africans in America. So when we talk about the decline of the economy in Africa, we can also internally we can look at the terms of African people as a colonized entity in America, and we look at the decline of the economic impact of Africans in America. So it's a global system, and we have to wake up and realize it is, in fact, a global system.
Okay, Anthony, what is your take on this article?
My take on the article is that people have to understand that commodity prices are set by imperialism. So it is imperialism that is causing the crisis in Africa, and also the failure of Africa to unite, as Nkrumah had advised decades ago. And only solution to the problems that Haki laid out is for the political unification of Africa under scientific socialism. However, most of Africa's current political leadership is very corrupt and beholden to the international bourgeoisie, and therefore they cannot make the kind of decisions that will provide a real solution to the problems that Africa is confronted with. And because the international bourgeoisie in the imperialist countries of the world set the commodity prices, they structured a way so that Africa stays in debt. And a unified Africa would be able to demand a fair price for its raw materials. And not only that, it would have the labor power and the technology needed to produce the finished products on African soil, and not have to depend on importing finished goods from the Western Hemisphere, as it currently does now.
You know, to both my guests, I'd like to get your response to two quotes that I read earlier in the program as relates to freedom, and I want to see if we can tie it in some kind of way, not only to this article, but to the realities that African people find themselves in. And those two quotes are, we talked about what is freedom earlier, and back Che, he mentioned that freedom, this was his concept of freedom. He said that we have no right to believe that freedom can be won without struggle. And the second one is by Alice Walker. She stated, No person is your friend who demands your silence or denies your right to grow. Now, it seems to me, listen to some of the things that y'all have articulated, that you're talking about the West will not give up the exploitation as it exists today in Africa. And you're also talking about the West, based upon their own policies, they don't view Africa or African people as being their friends. Y'all response to those two quotes as relates to this particular article, Brother Hackey?
Yeah, I think she's absolutely correct. I think one of the things that Sekou Touré talked about, he talked about the humane forces versus the anti-humane forces. We have to understand that these dualities, in fact, exist in the world. And so simply because we believe that the world should be organized around that which is moral and that which is right and that which is just, we understand that there are forces in this world who don't subscribe to that philosophy. And as such, you have no other recourse but to stand up and actually fight for your right to exist. So when you talk about these fundamental injustices, like whether it be an economic, political, social realm, then we understand that simply setting back and wish it was so simply won't make it so. We have to work in terms of making that a reality. And so for those who think that you simply pray your way in terms of a just world, they got another thing coming. So this is the fundamental philosophical schism that we face as a people, because often we keep on thinking in terms of, we think in terms of morality, not understanding that morality is very, very subjective. And those people who, in fact, practice exploitation or exploitation of our people who claim the view that what they're doing is, in fact, moral and just. And so, therefore, there is no meeting of the minds in terms of quite precisely what morality means. Now, here, given the schism, then we have no recourse but to stand up. And for anyone who thinks that simply, you know, not getting involved, not taking a stand, not actually fighting back is the solution, then I think that they fundamentally misunderstand the tenets of history. So it's important that people take a stand, people understand what the issues are, and people resist. There are no shortcuts. We don't have an alternative but to resist. The second part is that the question in terms of Alice Walker, I think, you know, she's absolutely correct. One of the things in terms of the proliferation of oppression of African people is that there's presumption that you don't have a right to have access to knowledge, that you don't have a right to even think. That, in fact, if you have the audacity to stand up and exercise your right to think or your right to critique, then you're perceived as somehow the enemy of the state. And so, therefore, we understand that given that reality, when we talk about in terms of what it is to be in terms of a friend, then we have to understand strategically that everybody out here, simply because they say your friend, isn't your friend. And so, therefore, any system, any individual, any group that opposes your human right in terms of critique, your human right in terms of understanding the reality of what you're confronted with, who dismiss your right in terms of taking a stand against these injustices, is not your friend at all. So we have to fundamentally understand that, because I think for too long our people have been deceived to think, believe that someone who says that, well, the plight of African people is simply wrong, is moral, is fine. But the bottom line in terms of, you know, if you do not deny me the same right for a more intricate critique in terms of what's going on, that in fact you say that my critique simply because, you know, it's too complex, that you're somehow saying that, you know, I somehow fall askance of any notion in terms of, you know, what is proper simply because you don't agree with my critique, then you should have a philosophical problem in terms of that. So I think that is a problem that we confront as a people, that we don't often engage in real critique in terms of, you know, what's going on in society. And when we do engage in critique that's really going on in society, that those people who, quote-unquote, are friends are the first to dismiss, you know, our critique. So we got some philosophically about a real problem, but clearly she's absolutely correct. We have to do a better job at defining who our friends are.
Anthony, your response to those two quotes and how they apply to today's world as relates to Africa and African people?
Yes, I concur with Chase's quote. It is absolutely correct, and it actually corresponds to an observation Kwame Nkrumah made, that the war for African liberation is neither moral nor immoral. It's an historically determined necessity. And what that means is the fact that it is not about morality. It is about our survival as a people on this planet. And so that's going to take struggle. And Alice Walker is also correct in her observation that those who suppress Africans' right to speak out and to stand up and assert their human rights are not true friends at all. And we do have to take a more critical look at the world and understand who our friends and enemies are. And we have to be organized and politically educated. And it's our overall lack of organization that's responsible for the plight that Africans in the diaspora and at home find themselves. We have to get better organized and build the organization necessary to liberate our motherland from the forces of imperialism. And build that Africa that's going to ensure the fullest human potential development for Africans worldwide.
Okay, in closing out this discussion on this particular article for today, as we talk about how Africa may have 9% of the world's poor in the next 10 years, I would like to make the statement and get this response to y'all, because when we talk about war, war comes in different forms. And to me, this whole concept of wanting to make Africa synonymous with poor is part of the psychological wall to limit our capabilities in thinking and perception of how we see ourselves. Now, it's often said that by Brother Kwame, he stated that African people are not poor, they are just poorly organized. Y'all respond to that in the context of this discussion? Brother Haki first, and then Brother Anthony.
Yeah, I will concur. African people are not poor. We are poorly organized. In fact, the key to our liberation is centralized organization. And for some reason, given the level of corruption that exists, in the African community, both on the continent and in America, we're unable in terms of coming together to critique, precisely what the issue is, and then to move forward in terms of remedying the situation we find ourselves confronted with. So I think that unless we come to some resolution in terms of a correct resolution in terms of what's going on to conceive of, it's very, very difficult in terms of bringing about a resolution. So I think to some extent, I think Brother Kwame was absolutely correct in terms of, his observation. But I think that more importantly, I think people have to come to the resolution, that there's much work to be done. And unless we do that, then the reality is that the work doesn't get done.
Brother Anthony, your response?
Yes, I concur with Kwame's observation, and it's true, and it's a test to the fact that Africans as a whole are the poorest people in the world. However, the resources that come out of Africa enrich the imperialist nations of the world. And the only way we change that situation is through organization and through work. We can't wish our problem away. We can't, pray or depend upon, the humanity of other people. We've got to assert our humanity and demand and fight for our rights and for our land.
Okay, on that note, we'd like to thank our guests today, Brother Haki and Brother Anthony, for sharing their perspective on the article, Africa may have 9% of the world's poor in the next 10 years. We'd like to remind you that this is MPH Radio. We come on every other Saturday, biweekly, and we try to bring issues and subjects to you that are very important to our underserved communities. So right now, we're going to pause for this call. When we come back, we're going to talk about what's coming up for MPH and how you can support MPH. You're listening to Missing Pages of History. Contribution to P.O. to Missing Pages of History, P.O. Box 27782, Richmond, Virginia 23261. Let's come a member of MPH. Come and join us. So like always, we'd like to thank you for allowing us to come to your homes this evening to speak to you. This is a bi-weekly program. We want to let you know that it is very important that we begin to start filling in our own missing pages. Not only fill them in, but we must be the architect. We must be the writers. We must be the designers. We must create, control, and protect our history and our contributions. There's a saying that he who controls your history will control you. We got to get out there. We got to get out that situation. We can't continue to let other people to control our histories. This is another reason why Miss Page's history came into existence. So, on that note, come support us, help our community. And just remember always, we must fill in those missing pages of history. We'll see you in 2 weeks, and we just want you to think about this question. If you had a choice of color, which one would you choose? And we'll see you in 2 weeks. This is MPH Radio.
One would you choose, my brothers? If there was no day or night, which would you prefer to be right? How long have you hated your white teacher? Who told you you love your black preacher? Do you respect your brother's woman friend and share with black folks not of kin? People must prove to the people
a better day is coming
for you and for me. With just a little bit more education
and love for our nation
would make a better society. Now some of us would rather cuss and make a fuss than to bring about a little trust. But we shall overcome, I believe, someday, if you'll only listen to what I have to say.
And how long have you held your white teacher?
Your black preacher, can you respect your brother's woman friend and share with black folks not of kin? I say now people must prove to the people
a better day is coming
for you and for me. With just a little bit more education
and love for our nation
would make a better society. And if you had a choice of colors, which one would you choose, my brothers? If there was no day or night, which would you prefer to be right? And if you had a choice of colors, which one would you choose, my brothers? If there was no day or night, which would you prefer to be right?
When I was pregnant in jail, I thought I was going to have a baby and the baby would never be with me, but I was acquitted a month and 3 days before Tupac was born. I was real happy because I had a son.
When I was young, me and my mama had beef, 17 years old, kicked out on the streets. Though back at the time, I never thought I'd see a face. Ain't a woman alive that could take my mama's place. Suspended from school, scared to go home. I was a fool with the big boys breaking all the rules. Said tears with my baby sister. Over the years we was poor than us, a little kid. And even though we had different daddies, the same
drama when things went wrong. We blame mama. I reminisce on the stress I caused. It was hugging on my mama from a jail cell. And who's thinking elementary? Hey, I see the penitentiary one day. Running from the police, that's right. Mama catch me, put a whoop into my backside. And even as a queen, mama, you always was a black queen, mama. I finally understand, for a woman it ain't easy trying to raise a man. You always was committed, a poor single mother on welfare. Tell me how you did it, there's no way I can pay you back. But the plan is to show you that I understand. You all appreciate it. Tell us it was fair. No love for my daddy, cause the coward wasn't there. He passed away and I didn't cry, cause my anger wouldn't let me feel for a stranger. They say I'm wrong and I'm heartless, but all along I was looking for a father, he was gone. I hung around with the thugs, and even though they showed a young brother love, I moved out, started really hanging. I needed money of my own, so I sang it. I ain't guilty, cause even though I said it feels good putting money in your mailbox, I love paying rent when the rent's due. I hope you got the diamond necklace that I sent to you, cause when I was low, you was there for me. You never left me alone because you cared for me. And I can see you coming home after work late. You're in the kitchen trying to fix us a hot plate. Just working with the scraps she was giving. And mama made miracles every Thanksgiving. But now the road got rough, you're alone. Trying to raise two bad kids on your own. And there's no way I can pay you back. But my plan is to show you that I understand. You all appreciate it. And dear mama, you all appreciate it. Some liquor and I reminisce, cause through the drama I can always depend on my mama. And when it seems that I'm hopeless, you say the words that can get me back in focus. When I was sick as a little kid, to keep me happy there's no limit to the things you did. And all my childhood memories are full of all the sweet things you did for me. And even though I act crazy, I gotta thank the Lord that you made me. There are no words that can express how I feel. You never kept a secret, always stayed real. And I appreciate how you raised me and all the extra love that you gave me. I wish I could take the pain away. If you can make it through the night, there's a brighter day. Everything will be alright if you hold on. It's a struggle every day, gotta roll on. And there's no way I can pay you back, but my plan is to show you that I understand. You all appreciate it. Dear mama,
don't you know we love you?
Dear mama,